On the line, I have Suzanne Rogers, and she's a policy analyst with Social Justice Ireland. Good morning to you, Suzanne.
Good morning, how are you?
Oh, not too bad at all. How do we stand now? I mean, any time we talk, things just seem to deteriorate instead of getting better. We're always optimistic when we finish talking, and then we're where we are now. I have to say, coming home last night, freezing cold, the wind, Arctic wind out there, and I'm going, how can people be on the streets in this weather? It's a horrible thought, but how do we stand now? I mean, they've done a survey, or they've done a sustainable development goals and all that across Europe. So tell me.
Right.
Cheer me up.
Well, I can see blue sky out my window, so that's my starting point anyway. So I'm going to focus on that, the little bit of blue sky that I can see. So, I mean, a lot of people probably are maybe familiar with the UN Sustainable Development Goals. So what they've tried to do is pick out sort of 17 headline targets for countries to work towards, and I'm so conscious, like, the deadline is 2030, which, as I get older, time passes so quickly. So, you know, we're careering towards 2030 now, and what we do every year is we look at 14 EU countries and we try and compare progress, see how we're doing versus these other countries. And the reason there's only 14 countries in it is because we only use data where we can get accurate data for all countries. So there might be certain things where, you know, only 7 or 8 countries have data on it, or Ireland has no data on it. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's kind of, you know, it's a small enough selection. But I suppose 14 countries is a lot. So out of the 14, we rank 10th. But it's different. We rank in different areas for different aspects of those 17 goals. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I can focus on the good ones if you want.
Well, just tell you, how comparable are we to the other 14?
Well, we rank, I suppose, 10th out of all. And, I mean, it gets, you know, because it'll be different in the sense. So, say things like SDG 4, so Sustainable Development Goal number 4 is quality education. We actually rank 1st in that. Well, you know, so that's quite an achievement.
Indeed, yeah.
You know, so, you know, most of us, all of us get primary. Most of us are now staying in, you know, in secondary school right the way through to leaving cert. And more and more and more of us are staying on for third level. More of us are doing masters. More of us are doing PhD. And I think as well what's happening is that lifelong conversation is also happening, that return to education. I did my leaving cert a long time ago, and a lot of the girls I would have left school with, we didn't go back to college until maybe we were in our 30s sometimes. So mm-hmm. that the fact that there's, you know, there's no barriers, well, I suppose costs can be a barrier sometimes. And but in terms of, like, so that's a brilliant one, I think, you know, if we're going to focus on the good bits.
I just want to ask you a question as regards that as well, because where it has widened as well. I was just watching a program last week, and I'm talking about the apprenticeships and the push towards people, young people getting apprenticeships now in some trades that are nearly gone. But a young girl of 18 on a high rise crane the other day, I saw in the news, which was wonderful, so in the building trade. So this sort of thing with women getting into trades maybe they wouldn't have been considered 4 years ago, would that add to everything as well?
Yeah, because again, the whole sort of access to education. So your apprenticeship, I mean, my beautiful young niece is an apprentice electrician at the moment, and that's something that certainly wouldn't have popped up on my radar when I was leaving school. Mm-hmm. So it's your skills path, I think, and I think you're absolutely right. Not all of us need to go to college, but, you know, education, critical thinking. So developing skills, I think, is really, really important anyway. So you're bang on, though, that apprenticeship thing now is definitely growing pace, and it gives people options where maybe they felt, well, actually, college isn't for me, but I now have an alternative path. I have somewhere else to be and I have somewhere else to go that I can also go and learn and grow. So I think the apprentice thing has been brilliant.
It's absolutely great, yeah. And as I was saying there, I mean, apart from that, it's to get the mindset maybe of employers as well, to get the idea of, I know it's you know, it's helpful, and that's understating it, college, but it's not to be an end all. It's to get that into the mindset of employers as well as the young kids as well, that if they feel anyway, not they shouldn't feel failure because there's so many opportunities out there and alternatives.
Yes, yeah, very much so.
Okay, what else can you put in the way apart from the education?
Sustainable cities and communities were number 4. So again, you know, in terms of you know, again, that's another really, really high one. You've got, there's an interesting one that I particularly liked, which is, you know, really focusing on the fact that Ireland is, it's a safe country to live in. So, yeah, SDG 16 is peace and justice. So on that particular one, we're number six, and that, you know, that really shows that, you know, this is a good, safe place to live. You know, we've got reasonably good, transparent, effective, accountable institutions. You know, you can access information. And again, we've come out really well as well on good health and well-being. Now, that doesn't take into account the COVID-19 pandemic, because that obviously has highlighted the importance, I think, of every country having that a social protection system and some sort of universal health coverage. So, you know, there's still an enormous amount left to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no doubt about it.
So has it obviously pointed out loads and lots of anomalies between ourselves and countries where we should be doing better than we are because of the perception of wealth that's supposed to be in Ireland. Indeed, ill-divided, I should say, in Ireland.
Yeah, and it was funny as well, because the countries that are down the bottom are Portugal, Italy, Spain and Greece, which I think, you know what I mean, that conversation crops up a lot. So you'd wonder as well, in terms of the austerity politics that happened after the last crash, so the fact that, you know, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, Finland, so that the Nordic countries come out on top, and then it's that, you know, Portugal, Italy, Spain, Greece and ourselves and are the bottom five. So it's the damage has been done by those austerity policies that were put in place after the last crash, and they take an awful long time to remedy. So, but it is interesting that it is those countries that are ranked. So we're 10th, and they're the four that come in behind us. So you can really see the impact that those policies have had on things like transport, on infrastructure, on the environment, on climate, on health, on education.
And it's funny if you were to talk to people, I think they'd be surprised by those statistics. But and as well as the same time, when you see those are at the top, the Nordic countries, they would say, well, they're sort of labelled with being high taxation, and that's why they can afford to do all this. But then they have the wages to pay the taxes, which we sort of don't have here to an extent as well. So it's sort of it's a balancing act that maybe the government is getting wrong here.
I think it's an interesting one as well about taxation, because there are other taxes apart from income tax. So as soon as you mention kind of, you know, if you say to anybody we need to increase tax or we need to broaden our tax base, the implication is always, oh, don't, you know, not out of my pay package. You know, immediately it's a bit like, yeah, that sounds great in principle, but don't take anything from me. But I often think as well that, you know, out of the taxes that I get, what's coming in return for that? You know, we have third level college fees, we have schools that look for voluntary contributions, you know, we don't have a universal free at the point of entry healthcare system, you know what I mean? So I'm paying for things anyway, in a sense, you know what I mean? But it might be the case of, you know, putting in what you get out. So I think sometimes there can be a conversation to be had about increasing taxation, and if it meant that every child who, you know, who needed speech and language therapy got it within, you know, a couple of weeks of making a call, every child who, you know, was on a waiting list for mental health support, that, you know, there was none of this sort of waiting 16 to 18 months for support. I mean, if there was an increase in taxes and you could actually see where it was going, that trolleys, you know, nobody was waiting on a trolley in a hospital, all of those things, it all joined up. So it is an interesting conversation, though, about where our money goes.
It's interesting you say that, Suzanne, because I would have to say I was a little bit surprised at the health minister when he was talking, I don't know, it was yesterday or the day before, and he seemed to be surprised at the waiting list and saying how unacceptable it was for the country in the state we're in now, to an extent, as regards, as I say, our supposed wealth. And as it's been happening for years and years, so I don't know how he seemed surprised at that. So there you go. Some of the other things, can you name one more for me, Suzanne, that stood out for you?
Let's have a look and see now. Again, I'm going to try. We'll try and end on a nice one, I think, if we possibly can, because let me just see. Again, you know, Life Below Water as well, we came in at number four, which again is quite interesting for an island nation, you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. But there's lots of work, though, to be done still there in terms of our sort of water supply and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's that phrase, I think, of, you know, a lot done, a lot to do. But you can see where, you know, things like, you know, zero hunger, you know, we obviously do quite well in that, in the sense that very few people are have no access to no food, you know, that sort of thing. But there's still a lot of work to do in terms of access to nutritional food. And you can see as well, the conversation in one hand is about the cost of living and how expensive food has become, and then producers are actually saying, well, actually the cost of the food doesn't really cover our production costs. So that'll be an interesting conversation as well, I think, as we move forward.
I don't think that, as well as that, the growth of the population, the government, I don't think that factors into their estimation either, over the past, say, 20 years or even 10 years, how the population growth has been for the services that we have. You know what I mean? They didn't sort of expand it enough to cater for the explosion of the population.
Yeah.
That would come into it, yeah?
Well, I suppose, yeah, we're up around the 5 million. I mean, when they look at sort of where they're going to build houses and where they're going to build schools and where they're going to build hospitals and how many teachers to hire, there is, the demographics do come into it. And you can see where now what's going to happen is many more of us, thankfully, it's brilliant, much, much, much more of us are going to live longer, and we're going to become, there will be more of us who are old, and there will be more of us who will be very old. And that will again, we'll have to change conversations maybe about who cares for me when I'm 89 or 93. So, you know, the healthcare system would need to be factored into that, housing would need to be factored into that. So, but I mean, the population growth, I suppose you've gone from what, 3.5 million to 5 million in the last, since
15
years,
maybe
15-20 years. Yes, I mean, there hasn't been that many houses built, that's for sure.
They'd have to talk, I mean, with all the talk of earlier or later last year about pensions, I think they'd have to talk about letting people work longer if they choose to, give people the option. I mean, there's lots of people that just are told, look, when 65, 66, that's it, you have to finish work. And as you said, we're living longer, so they're going to have to change the structure there as well, and the thinking behind that.
Yeah, we're living longer, and thankfully, again, we're much healthier for longer as well. I mean, you know, you'll meet people and they'll say, "Oh, I'm 72," and they look 52. So, you know, we're more vibrant, we're healthier, we're much more engaged than we used to be. And I think the fact that we are living longer as well, it goes back to that piece about education and lifelong education. The traditional path was out of school, into a job, 40 years in the job, retired, boom. Now we're going to need to reskill. The skills that I had 25 or 30 years ago in the workplace are you know, of no use or value to anybody. You know, pre-computers, sending stuff out by fax machine. I mean, I need to reskill as I go. If my career now lasts from, you know, 20 to 70 or 75, that access to education and lifelong learning as well, I think, will have to be a part of the conversation.
Indeed.
And
as well as everything else, some of the skills that maybe have been lost can be revived, and all that's in some of the trades. So can we end on an optimistic note this time again, Suzanne?
I hope so. Again, I'm looking at blue skies out my window, so I'll focus on that.
You sound like a politician now. The diversion was there, I could see it. Listen, it's been great. Have a good weekend, Suzanne. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.